Good morning and welcome to another online Awaken sermon. The weather is cooperating this morning. So we're back here on the outside patio. There's no snow. It's warm enough. And I hope it stays this way because I am ready for some good spring weather. Don't know about you, but I am so there. And today it's week 10 already of our online services. And I'm so glad that you have joined us for this morning. And we seem to still be going strong. I don't know how many more weeks we'll be doing online services for, but obviously we will keep you updated with any progress on that front. Now this morning, what I want to do is I want to continue the conversation that we've been having over the past couple of weeks. This conversation about what is it that makes us human. So this would be part three of that conversation. And I have a whole bunch of ideas, a couple of quotes this morning, some stories, some things that I'm thinking about, some things that I'm learning. And what I want to talk about in all of it is one of the things that makes us human is imperfection. It's imperfection, that we are not perfect beings. No matter how much we try to be or how much we might think perfectionism is something that we should aspire towards, we're imperfect. And acknowledging that, admitting that, being honest about it is, I mean, for me, that has been such a healing and transformational truth to acknowledge in my own life. Now, a couple of weeks back, I'd been having a conversation with Kurt. That was one of the sermons I posted a few weeks ago. And he had asked me a question, and it made me think about this quote that I had recently run across, that I recently heard from the latest Star Trek series, Picard. Absolutely brilliant. Bringing back Patrick Stewart. I mean, you can't go wrong with that one. So in the middle of one of the episodes, he was talking about a past decision that he had made and then some of the fallout from that decision. And what he acknowledged to one of his friends in talking about what had happened was that he had let his perfect become the enemy of the good. That quote, it's like I had to pause that moment just to let that sink in. I had let my perfect become the enemy of good. I mean, I can so relate to that. And I did a Google search on that particular phrase, on that quote, and I found out that it actually goes back to Voltaire, back in the 1700s, a French Enlightenment philosopher, where he said, "I let my perfect become the enemy of good." And back when this whole the COVID-19, when the pandemic started and church was forced to no longer meet in person and we had to do everything online, I had to learn this new skill that I'm doing right now, talking in front of a computer, delivering sermons in front of a computer, which is completely different from delivering a sermon in front of you, in front of a live audience, because I get to see your feedback and I see how many of you are looking at your watches. I can see how many of you are dozing off, how many of you are scrolling through your phones. And so I know whether or not I'm connecting with the audience. But delivering a sermon through a computer, completely different ballgame. And it was a pretty steep learning curve for me. I've recorded a couple of sermons or a couple of teasers, coming attractions for some sermon series. I did a couple of quick videos before, but those were always 2 to 3 minute videos. And I always had a pretty good idea of exactly what I was going to say. I would run through it a couple of times. Much harder to do, to run through a 30 minute sermon 7 times before you actually deliver it through a video screen. And I found that I was having such a hard time with recording sermons online. I would start recording them, and then 5 minutes into it, 6 minutes into it, I would say something that I didn't like. And so I would hit stop, and I would start all over again. And then I'd go for a while. I had run through the beginning, so I knew exactly how I wanted to say things, what I wanted to say. I would get about like the 8 minute mark, and then I would hit stop and I'd start recording again. There was a couple of times I actually got through the entire sermon and was like, don't really like it. Let me do it all over again. So this was obviously taking up a lot of time. And then there was actually one sermon that I gave. Don't mind the helicopter up there. There was one sermon I gave where, and actually that's gotten me to stop a couple of times too. I had some neighbors who came by and I started talking with them. And so I've had to stop and there'd be all this external noise or I would hear Reese screaming in the background. But there was one time where I gave a sermon and I had finished it. I thought it went really well. I liked the final product. I had uploaded it. It was all ready to be sent out. But there was one phrase I said that I was absolutely fixated on. I just couldn't get it out of my head. And all day long, that phrase just kept repeating itself over and over again in my mind. And I kept thinking, why did I say that? Everything else I liked about the sermon, but it was that one phrase. I was like, oh, if only I had said things differently. If only I hadn't said that phrase, then the sermon would be perfect. And I kept asking Steph, I'm like, hey, do you think I should go re-record this? Do you think I should go redo the entire thing because I said it this way instead of this way? And she looked at me like I was crazy. She's like, really? You're going to spend who knows how much more time away from us, outside, in your office, wherever it might happen to be, re-recording a sermon that was really, really good. It just wasn't perfect. So I totally get this quote when Patrick Stewart says, I let my perfect be the enemy of good. I totally get it because I don't know about you, but I'm someone who struggles with perfectionism. My name's Dave, and I struggle with perfectionism. I want things to be perfect. I want things to be a certain way. I've been mentioning over the past couple of weeks that I finished weeding out my flower beds. This week, I started seeing weeds popping up in the flower beds again. And I know, I'm absolutely crazy. Some of you are like, who cares about a couple of weeds? But others of you, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You see a weed and you're like, I got to go pull that thing. I got to go remove it because the flower bed, it doesn't have that pristine, perfect image that I'm going for. Or yesterday was Reese's birthday and he got a water table for his birthday. Had no idea the water table required so much assembly. I thought it was snap a couple of things together, but no, of course it needs a screwdriver and you have to spend, I don't even want to tell you how long I spent trying to put this whole water table together for him. The only saving grace was the fact that he absolutely loved it and spent the next hour of the evening playing outside with his water table. But I needed Steph's help to put this thing together because she had to hold one piece. It actually says in the directions, requires two people for assembly. And I'm like, no. But of course, I got to the point where it needed that second person. And so I had her holding one piece to it, and I was trying to screw part of it together. And the piece that we were screwing together, it didn't sit flush on the table. It didn't snap in perfectly. So what did I do? I unscrewed this really long screw that I had put into the water table, unscrewed it and tried doing it again. And the second time through, it didn't come out perfectly. There's a little gap and that gap annoys me to no end. But I finally realized, okay, I'm not going to spend another half an hour. I got a blister from doing it. kids' toys. And I realized, all right, this is the best it's going to be. This is good. Don't let my perfect be the enemy of the good. Yeah, some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. But see, the thing about it, the thing about perfectionism, the thing about seeking after the perfect, as much as we like to think it just stays in one area of our lives, maybe it's the flower beds, it's the yard, it's the grass, maybe it's putting together kids' toys, maybe it's the creative work that you do or the work that you do throughout the week. As much as we like to think that perfectionism can stay in one area, the truth is how you do one thing is how you do everything. And I know it's true for me in my life. I don't have this ideal. I don't have this pursuit of the perfect simply in just a couple of areas. I have the pursuit of the perfect in all areas of my life. And I'm trying to recover from that. I've become aware of it, and I'm trying to learn that that isn't the most healthy way to live. In the New Testament, there's a letter that the Apostle Paul writes to the church at Corinth. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, starting in verse 9, here's what Paul says. And he's just been talking about this thorn in the flesh that he has, this nagging, vexing thing, right? There's a whole bunch of speculation as to what exactly is the thorn in the flesh that Paul's talking about. But after talking about this and having prayed to God to have it removed, this thorn, this annoyance, this imperfection, this weakness is still there in Paul's life. And here's what he says. After praying, the Lord says to me, verse 9, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. This is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Yeah, for when I am weak, then I am strong. Here's Paul. And he has, if you know anything about Paul's life, and if you read through some of his other letters, some of the other things that he says, you realize Paul is a perfectionist. He is someone who is constantly after the perfect, whether it's in his own morality, it's in how he approaches his work, how he does everything. Paul has been a perfectionist. But at this point, what we're seeing is it's as if Paul is giving up his pursuit of perfectionism. Paul is realizing that it's actually in his weaknesses, it's in his imperfections, it's in those moments when everything isn't going the way in which he expects or the perfect way that he wants things to go, that he's finding this divine strength. See, he's come to the end of what he can do on his own. He's come to the end of his own power, and he's realizing that true strength, well, it's actually found in imperfection and admitting that imperfection. True strength is found in acknowledging all the moments, all the times when he didn't live up to the standard that he set for himself. Or when life, the perfect life that he had expected for himself, well, he's realizing it's not going to always go that way. And the perfect life is actually an imperfect, messy life. Because it's in those moments of imperfection where he comes to find grace. See, whenever we are pursuing the perfect, essentially what we're saying is, I can do this on my own. I have all the strength, I have all the morality to do everything on my own. And what we're saying is, we don't actually need anything beyond ourselves, that we have within us everything that it takes to reach the perfect. And so what that life is, what the pursuit of the perfect or perfectionism is, well, it's really our own inability to accept grace. It's our own inability to accept the fact that life isn't always perfect. And maybe it's okay that life isn't always perfect, because maybe it's actually in that gap where we come to recognize the divine power, grace, and strength that God desires to bestow upon us. Maybe it's in our own pursuit of the perfect that we actually don't allow ourselves the room or the space to accept the grace that we all desperately need. I've heard about when Native Americans used to make blankets. They would leave in the corner of one of the blankets, they would leave a blemish. They would leave some of the material that wasn't exactly tied together. It wasn't woven together in a nice, neat way. Their reasoning, their rationale for this is because it's through the blemish where the spirits enter. It's through the imperfection where they believe the spirits were able to enter the blanket. I love that picture. I love that truth, right? Is it not truth? It's in our imperfections. It's in the moments when things are completely upside down. The moments when you've blown it the most. It's in your disappointments when you actually have space in your life for the divine to enter in. I mean, is this not the message of the Christian faith? Think about the cross. The cross was the greatest moment of defeat. Was it not, right? This was the end of the story. This was God being killed by humans. And yet it was in that very moment, it was in the cross, in this moment of loss and death and weakness, humiliation. I mean, the cross was a sign of humiliation. It was a sign that you had been defeated. Yet it was in this very moment that we see the divine grace of God that's over all of us. Yeah, I mean, the cross is at the heart of the Christian faith, showing us that it's in moments of loss, pain, imperfection, when grace is most made evident. I mean, this is the message of Jesus, that the grace of Christ is upon us. And I think, you know, for me, I'm most aware of that grace, honestly, in the moments when I've most blown it, and when I'm willing to admit it, and when I'm willing to be honest and acknowledge those mistakes, sins, failures. I think one of the hardest things, though, for us to do is to admit those moments of imperfection, because we like to remain strong, right? I mean, think about Paul's letter, that strength is found in weakness. We don't often believe that, or we might intellectually believe that or admit it, but when it comes down to the real life, when it comes down to our own lives, I mean, how often do we honestly think that strength is found in weakness? It's a badge of honor in our culture for strength to be found in strength, to keep motoring through. Recently, during a community group, I was asking everyone, what do you think most makes us human? What is it that you think makes all of us human? And one response was vulnerability. Vulnerability. Yeah, the ability for us to acknowledge that we're flawed and for us to be honest with others about that. Yeah, that's a really hard thing to do. To be honest with some of the most painful moments in our lives. But I totally agree with that. I totally agree, because who are the people that you most resonate with? For me, the people that I most resonate with are the ones who are honest. The ones who are honest about their flaws. The ones who are honest about their failures, their mistakes. For me, the people that I absolutely love having conversations with are the ones who have come to the end of themselves. The ones who had tried keeping it together for so long on their own, but then it all blew up. And they realized that they could no longer keep the game going, right? Because often it becomes a game, right? Our social media pages, they're all a game, for the most part, of showing others how perfect and ideal everything is in our lives, and how we don't have any blemishes in our lives. But yet, man, the people that I love talking with, people that I listen to, the mentors that I've chosen for me in my life are those who are just over the whole game and who are willing to admit, yeah, this is where I blew it. And this is what I'm learning in the process. And this is how I've experienced in a new, fresh, transformational way the divine grace that's upon me. I've witnessed it. I've experienced it in the moments when it all fell apart. I mean, those are the people that I absolutely love talking with, because you can tell they have some depth to them. There's not this shallow existence of trying to hold and keep everything together and play the game and wear that mask and convince others, or maybe they're trying to convince themselves that everything is perfect. But rather, they're willing to say, yep, blew it here. Totally dropped the ball in this case over here. And I actually heard a speaker one time say that she does not trust anyone who isn't willing to be vulnerable. I love that. Yeah, I feel the same way. Anyone who is all about strength and keeping it together and not showing the cracks in their armor, I'm like, no, there's something more going on there. I mean, how many of you love listening to the person that constantly is talking about their achievements? I did this. I was great. I did this. I tried this for the first time. And you know what? I was absolutely amazing. I mean, those people annoy us to no end, because that's not how life works for most of us. I would argue that's not how life works for any of us. Maybe there's that one person or two people that it does. But yeah, for others, if you're like me, you're up and then you're down. You're up and then you're down. You're doing so well. Things are going great. And then all of a sudden, you blow it. And you make that mistake that you thought you were over. Or something pops up in your life and you're like, oh, I thought I was perfect in this area. I guess I was wrong. Yeah, life is a whole series of ups and downs, of highs, of lows, of successes and failures. And I think part of being human is embracing all of it. It's embracing the imperfections as much as embracing the successes. It's embracing our moral failures. The times in our lives when we don't live up to that standard, that moral standard that we've set for ourselves, or the moral standard that we believe we should be living. And that's where vulnerability comes in. There's another New Testament letter, the book of James. And in this letter, James says, he writes this, confess your sins to one another and you will be healed. Notice in that, he doesn't say, if you sin, if you fall short of moral perfection, then and only then confess your sins. He's like, yeah, you're going to fall short at some point. You're going to make a mess of things at some point. It's not an if, it's a when you do. Yeah, we've all been there. We all need that grace. We all need that divine grace of Christ. And what James says, absolutely brilliant. He's saying, when that happens, don't run from it. Don't hide it. Don't bury it. Don't pretend like it's not there. Don't keep a strong exterior, but rather admit them to one another. And in confession, in your vulnerability, you will be healed. As if in your vulnerability, you will come to discover the divine grace that will carry you through. The divine grace that forgives. As if you're holding on to it, if you're keeping it stuffed in, it's as if there's going to sort of be this lingering, haunting feeling over you that you're not able to move beyond it. But as you release it, as you talk about it, admit it, acknowledge it, then you'll come to find healing. You'll come to find a freedom from all that haunts you, from all the past regrets or shame that you carry around with you. I remember when I went to seminary, one of the exercises, one of the, I guess you could call it disciplines or practices, spiritual practices that we were required to do for one of the first ministry classes that I took, was to find someone that you trusted who was in the class, and carve out about an hour or so, and then just sit in silence for the first 15, 20 minutes and just ask God to reveal to you anything that you've been carrying around with you that you haven't confessed, anything that's sort of been lingering in your mind or that you've been trailing with you that's just sort of sat there and you've allowed for it to take up some real estate in your mind or in your soul. And then write all the things that come to mind, write them down on a piece of paper. And then after you've had that time of silence, begin confessing to the other all the things that came up during that time of silence. Now, I know that sounds absolutely terrifying. Yeah, it did. That's why you have to find someone that you trust. That's why finding people in your lives who you can trust with the most messy moments of your life, absolutely crucial. I'd argue that's another thing that makes us human. The need to have those, or to have a group or even a single individual in your life who you can be brutally honest with. I'm so lucky, so blessed, the fact that I have a few individuals in my life who I have been friends with for years now, and we can just be brutally honest about whatever it is that we've been through, and there's no shame being heaped on the other. It can be completely transparent, and I've experienced that, what James says about confessing your sins, your past failures, mistakes to others, and you'll find healing. I've experienced that. It's true. It works, because when you allow someone else into that, when you let someone else know, hey, I'm not perfect, it does something. It brings freedom to you. And when the other person admits that back to you, it's like, all right, so I'm not alone in this. I'm not the only one who's imperfect. And see, I think one of the other things that our inability to, or rather our pursuit of perfection does, is it doesn't allow us to live in the moment. It doesn't allow us to be present to life that's unfolding before us. When I had asked that question in the community group, what do you all think makes us human? We had that one person, and you always have this person in your group. I won't call out who this person was. Maybe you can all guess, but there's always one of these in the group. So they Googled, what makes us human? And I'm forgetting exactly. I actually couldn't find the exact definition that they found. But one of the things that, according to Google, what makes us human, one of the things is being human means to live in the present. I love that definition, because living in the present means you're not living in the past or you're not living in the future, but you're living here in the now. When we're after the perfect, when we let our perfect be the enemy of good, we don't allow ourselves permission or freedom to live in the present, because we're looking to the past, living in regret for how we didn't live into the perfect 15 minutes ago, 5 years ago, 20 years ago. Or we're so worried about the future. We're so worried about making sure that our future becomes the perfect future that we expect for ourselves, that it takes us away from the present moment. Yeah, when you're no longer about the pursuit of perfectionism, it frees you up to be here. It frees you up to be in the moment. Yeah, living in regret or living in worry, the future, it takes away the very life that exists here and now. Yeah, I'm learning this all the time. I'm learning this more and more. Going back to learning about sermons and giving them through video as opposed to in real time. After I had given that one sermon, the rest of the day, the thing that was haunting me, the thing that kept popping up in my mind was, should I re-record this? Should I do it again? I mean, it wasn't a fleeting thought. This was something that was dominating my thoughts. I had allowed it to take up mental real estate. And there was all this worry about the future. Well, what are people going to think about this? What are they going to say about this one phrase that I didn't say perfectly? And then there was regret. Regret about, oh, why couldn't I have said this differently 2 hours ago, 4 hours ago, when I had recorded this? So I wasn't living in the moment. I was living in both the past and the future, because there's a gap between reality and perfection. But perfectionism, it's an illusion anyway. It's all an illusion. Recently, there was a reality TV couple that came out publicly that they were going to separate. And I was talking to Steph about this, and she was so disappointed that this couple was going to be separating, that they were divorcing. And she's like, man, I guess the lesson is, don't be on a reality TV show together. See, when you're on a reality TV show, there's so much pressure to have to be perfect, to have the perfect life. Or even, you know what I think? I think sometimes becoming imperfect or showing your imperfections has become such a thing that there's almost this, there's this pressure to show some of your imperfections. But the truth is, man, when you let everything, when you're showing everything and there's no mystery, or when your whole life is a public life, there's the pressure to show things in a certain way. And I think that pressure, it gets to you. It gets to you. There's this pressure that we need to have the perfect post and even the perfect weakness post. You know what I'm talking about, right? Oh, well, I should let people know that I'm human, that I have a couple cracks in the armor. So let me put this post up to show some of it. But what happens is, when you live that way, there's all this pressure, and eventually I think we crack under the pressure. We crack under the pressure of having to show things in a particular way. We're all imperfect. We all have weaknesses. We're all in need of divine grace. We're all in need of a power, of a strength that's beyond ourselves. I let my perfect be the enemy of good. What I'm learning, good is okay. Good is okay. There was a ceramics class. This is a study that's been published. It's a very, very familiar study. And there was a very popular study. And the ceramics teacher, he broke the class up into two different groups. And he said, for half of you, you're going to be graded on how much you produce. So on how many pieces you're able to produce at the end of the semester. For the other half, you're going to be graded on the quality of that which you produce. So you'll get an A if you can produce the perfect pot. Now, at the end of the semester, guess which group had the better quality? The group that was graded on how much they produced, quantity. Why? Because the group that was graded on quality was in their head. They were all in their heads the entire time. They were so worried, so concerned about producing the perfect piece of pottery that it paralyzed them. And they weren't able to do their best work. But the group that was just told, just keep producing, just keep firing off as much pottery as you possibly can. Their work, man, the quality of that work was even better than the other group. See, for me, perfectionism, it takes up so much mental real estate in my head. It paralyzes me. It stops me from producing work. It takes up so much of my time. Remember back to the sermons. I can't even tell you how many extra hours I've spent re-recording or stopping and recording something over because, ooh, this phrase didn't come out perfectly. Or I wish I had said this a little differently. But going back to the advice that was given to me at the beginning of this pandemic, people don't want the perfect orator right now. People want to know that you're in this with them. People want presence. See, ultimately in life, that's what we want from each other. We want presence. And we want others to be vulnerable with their imperfections and their flaws. And when we are so concerned with holding everything together and not showing our cracks, it takes up so much time. It takes up so much space in our heads, and it removes us from the life that is right there in front of us. So my prayer for you this week is that you would no longer let your perfect be the enemy of good. That you would be a person who is able to be vulnerable with a trusted group of friends. And as you confess your sins, as you confess your imperfections, your weaknesses to yourself, to God, to those that you trust, may you find healing. May you find true divine grace. As you're willing, like Paul was, to come to the end of yourself, may you find that strength is found in weakness. May you no longer feel the pressure to have to hold everything tightly together. May that exhausting path be behind you. And may you walk the path of freedom. The imperfect, messy path that allows good to be okay. The path that allows yourself grace for the moments when you blew it. The moments when you didn't live up to the standard that you've set for yourselves. And may you find the divine grace of Christ that covers over any failures, sins, past mistakes. May you find that divine grace of Christ that brings healing and freedom and life to your soul. May you find strength in weakness this week. Grace and peace to you, my friends.